This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello, and welcome to Past, the podcast about those who would never rule. I'm Veronica Fortune, and this week's episode is
Charles of Valois, Part 2.
Welcome back. Last week ended with Philip the Fair gifting Charles of Valois a rather nice county. So that's a few for you now, Charles. This week, I'll start looking at Charles's continuing military service to the Kingdom of France and spend a bit more time discussing important events within the Capetian royal family. In 1294, Charles of Valois was needed again for his military might. Philip the Fair had declared the English holding of Gascony forfeit due to Edward I not coming to him when Philip had asked the English king to appear in French court to answer for ongoing issues between the French, English, and Gascon sailors. Remember, Gascony was a French fief. It was held by the English crown in homage to the French crown. Charles was given the honor of leading Philip's troops into Gascony. His tactics were harsh, but effective. When he took a large town, he released the English captives, but kept the Gascons. He then had them hanged outside of the walls of Bordeaux, which he was besieging. The Gascon nobility in the city were enraged with their English leaders. Not long after, the English commanders tried to sneak out of the city overnight. Bordeaux was taken soon after. There was also a 13-week siege of Saint-Sever that Charles successfully led, but the city was quickly retaken by the English. Well, the Gascon English. Edward I looked as though he was going to negotiate, but then changed his mind. Now Edward had been offered Charles's half-sister, Margaret's hand in marriage a few years earlier. She had been born in 1279, so was 15 at this point. And like everyone in the family, except possibly Charles of Valois, at least based off of his effigy, she was rather pretty. It appeared, though, that Edward I was willing to give up his French bride, so France played a great card. They offered Charles of Valois' oldest daughter, Isabella of Valois, to Edward Baliol, the King of Scotland, for his son, John Baliol. Young Isabella was 3, and John Baliol was 12. With this, Edward I requested a truce, but then went back on it. Charles doesn't take a much bigger part in the rest of the Gascon theater of war. In the long run, Edward I will marry Margaret of France, as I mentioned in the introduction. Isabella of Valois will marry John III of Brittany, and sadly, she dies at 18. Charles of Valois had been requested by the Pope. In 1296, this was Boniface VIII, and he was requested to come to Rome to help negotiate between England, France, the Spanish king, Scotland, and Flanders. Instead, Philip the Fair sent him to Flanders to assist against English forces there. Now, I don't have a lot of details about his actions there. Don't worry, things went well, but it's always hard to find out about those more minor characters in history and their battles. Petit, though, found a great little piece of history while writing his book. In one of the Icelandic chronicles, it was noted that Charles of Valois was captured by Edward I's forces in Ghent. The Chronicle even noted that Robert II of Artois was captured as well, and this Robert of Artois is the great-grandfather of the Robert of Artois that Edward III uses as an excuse to have a problem with Philip VI, Charles of Valois' son. To be clear, neither Charles nor Robert were captured at all by Edward's forces. It really didn't happen, but it shows the game of telephone that some parts of history can be. We know this didn't happen because it wasn't recorded in any other chronicles, and we have no record of a ransom request being made. It would be something, though, to give serious thought if those other chronicles didn't exist, but this was a distant chronicle, so it does make me think that someone visited the court of Iceland from mainland Europe and carried information that they themselves hadn't fact-checked. Charles of Valois took a short leave from Flanders to be present in Paris for the promulgation of the canonization of Louis IX. He would have known that his grandfather, now truly Saint Louis, had been declared a saint earlier, but the promulgation would have been the public dissemination of this fact. Congratulations, Louis! It only took 27 years, which is really fast. I will point out that Anjou, Charles's great uncle and the late King of Sicily, had been one of the major campaigners for Louis IX's canonization, and he sadly didn't live long enough to see it. One further note, Louis IX's sister, Isabel, was canonized in 1696. It was a rather saintly family in that generation. Charles of Valois was back in Flanders in 1300 when the English forces were expelled. In their submission, the people of Ghent were allowed to keep their privileges, and only a few hostages were exchanged. Really, it's likely that messing up the taxes that could be gathered from the area was not something the French crown wanted to do. Flanders is historically known as a trading area, and there was good money in that. After receiving the submission from Flanders, Charles was able to make it back to Paris in time for his sister Blanche's wedding on the 24th of May 1300. And not long after, it was time for Charles to plan his own wedding. Remember, his first wife, Marguerite, had died in 1299, and while he had 5 surviving children by her, it's always a good idea to be on the lookout for a wealthy or powerful heiress to marry. And this is where Catherine of Courtenay, the titular Latin Empress of Constantinople, comes back into our story. Between the time we last saw her, becoming unbetrothed to Frederick of Aragon, and marrying Charles on the 28th of January 1301, she had one further betrothal, this time to James of Majorca, the son of James III of Majorca, who came up in last week's episode. The younger James left Catherine to become a monk. It's a bit insulting, but in the time, serving God was very important. Charles of Valois was given permission to marry Catherine by the Pope and his former father-in-law, which is kind of awkward, on the requirement that he reconquer Sicily. His brother, Philip the Fair, also made him promise not to retake Constantinople without his express permission. It was obviously an incredibly romantic marriage. Okay, so what was the Latin Empire of Constantinople? I'm going to guess you've heard of Byzantium, what we call the Eastern Roman Empire after the fall of the Western Roman Empire. Well, the people of the time never called it that. They called it the Roman Empire. You may also remember that there had been a schism between the Western Church, which would eventually be called the Roman Catholic Church, and the Eastern Church, which we now call the Greek Orthodox Church, in 1054, the Great Schism. No one at the time knew it was a Great Schism, and less than 50 years after, the Byzantine Emperor Alexios I asked the Western Church for assistance from the European kingdoms to help with the invasions of the Seljuk Turks on his eastern and southern borders. As you may know, the Church did agree to help, but then expanded the brief to retaking Jerusalem from the Muslims, who had held it for at least 100 years at that point. They all agreed to help Alexios on their way. This and geography set a precedence for crusaders to go through Constantinople on their way to the Holy Land. All went well-ish until 1204, when the crusaders of the Fourth Crusade, sacked Constantinople and Baldwin of Flanders had himself crowned the Latin emperor. Baldwin was Catherine's great-great-great-uncle. I think I have the correct number of greats there. Catherine's father, Philip I, never ruled due to the Byzantium crown being reclaimed by the Palaiologos dynasty in 1259. I hope that somewhat clears up the Latin Emperor of Constantinople thing. I will at some point cover the Fourth Crusades and those who would never rule in relation to that. Now, with this marriage, Charles was finally required, not requested, to go to Rome as part of his promise to retake Sicily. If I'm reading my translation properly, he took Catherine with him on this trip, at least for the first part. The Pope at this point was still Boniface VIII, and at the moment he was getting along with the French throne, which is good for the moment. In addition to a lot of money, the Pope invested Charles with full powers to pacify Italy, and gave him a handful of titles, including Peacemaker of Tuscany, Captain General of Romagna, Vicar of the Pope in all the lands of the Holy See. These feel a bit like Barack Obama getting a Nobel Peace Prize in 2009, awards for things not yet done. Interestingly, a not insignificant amount of what is known about Charles's performance in Italy comes to historians from Dante. Yes, he of the Divine Comedy. In fact, his exile from Florence was partially due to Charles's performance in Italy. Dante had been sent to Rome as part of a Florentine negotiating team. You're probably wondering why Charles was involved in Florence when he was meant to be retaking Sicily. Just in case your knowledge of geography of Italy isn't up, Florence is landlocked and more than 1,000 kilometers from Sicily, which is an island, of course. It's also almost 500 kilometers away from Naples, the mainland portion of what was the Kingdom of Sicily. It's also north of Rome, so Charles had to backtrack to get there. Well, the Pope was taking advantage of Charles's military presence to deal with Italian political issues. In the Pope's defense, the Florentines were asking for his help, but I'm sure they really wanted him to sort it out himself and not to send a heavy to do it. I should mention that Florence and Tuscany in general had been struggling with a bit of a fallout from the 11th and 12th century investiture controversy. Yes, I'm aware we're into the 14th century at this point. The original struggle had been between two groups, the Guelphs and the Ghibellines. I really hope I said those right. The former on the side of the papacy and the latter on the side of the Holy Roman Emperor. The Ghibellines had been defeated in Italy in the late 1200s, but the Guelphs ended up fracturing into the White Guelphs and the Black Guelphs. The White Guelphs didn't support the papacy, and the Black Guelphs did. This was directed more at Boniface specifically than the general idea of a pope, just to be clear. I should note that the merchants of Florence were unimpressed with either group of Guelphs. So, at this point, you may know more about the ongoing political strife than Charles did when he arrived in Florence on the 5th of November, 1301. So, instead of negotiating, Boniface sent Charles. The white and black factions in the city had kept things at a stalemate, both sides following strict rules to keep from killing each other. Charles's presence upset these rules and the balance they were keeping. He invited the city magistrates to dine with him, and due to his status, they couldn't really say no, even though it tipped the balance a bit. The leader of the Black Guelphs, Corso Donati, was traveling with Charles, but Charles had promised not to let him back into the city. Well, Charles lied a little and totally let him back in. Corso led a massacre of the White Guelphs, probably a lucky thing for Dante that he had remained in Rome since he was a White Guelph. For Charles, this should have been embarrassing, but he was well paid by the Black Guelphs. If you're curious, Dante never returned to Florence, and he wasn't a fan of Charles. Corso would be killed by an angry mob in 1308, which sounds painful. After sorting things out in Florence, quotes around sorting things out, Charles returned to Rome in February 1302, and he did pick up his wife along the way. Boniface was not impressed and actually sent Charles back to Florence to keep sorting things out and gave him more money. The White Guelphs, who were in exile, were convicted of treason in absentia, had their property confiscated and burnt, and the Florentine leadership got money from the confiscated property. If anyone is interested in a history of Florence, let me know. I might do one for the YouTube channel. Florence is one of my favorite places in the entire world. And after this message, you'll hear more.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
After burning a bit of Florence, Charles finally set off for Sicily. His army landed in May 1302, and very quickly he lost half his men. I mean, they died due to disease, dysentery anyone, and general warfare. Thankfully, for all who were still alive, Frederick III and Charles II, as in Frederick of Aragon and Charles of Sicily, agreed to a peace treaty, the Peace of Calta Bellota. In it, Frederick agreed to marry Charles II's daughter, Eleanor of Anjou, so Charles of Valois' former sister-in-law. His kingdom, the island of Sicily, was to now be called the Island of Trinacria. And the kingdom was to return to Charles II of Sicily and Naples or his descendants upon the death of Frederick III. As you can probably guess from my earlier discussion of the Kingdom of Two Sicilies, that last part of the peace was not honored. For Charles of Valois, this peace means he was promised galleys and horsemen by Frederick when he finally went to reconquer Constantinople. And do remember that Frederick is Charles's maternal cousin. Everyone's related. With things settled in Sicily, Trinacria, Charles of Valois returned to France in early February 1303. He did stop by Rome on his way. At some point while he had been at war, his wife had given birth to their only son, John, who would sadly die in 1308. While they were traveling back to France, she was heavily pregnant or traveling with a very young baby. Their daughter, Catherine, was born in early 1303. No one remembered to write down the date of her birth. Remember how I said earlier that in 1301, Boniface was getting along with the French throne? Well, that had changed just a bit. And I can only imagine how awkward this next period of French and papal history was for Charles. Buckle up, because it gets intense. France was in a bit of a state when Charles of Valois returned. Not long after his return, Philip the Fair's senior advisor, Guillaume de Nogaret, laid charges against Boniface. You know, the Pope. Why was de Nogaret going after the Pope? Well, we need to go back a little ways. In 1297, Philip the Fair had been trying to tax clergy and churches within France. He was also trying to appoint his own bishops without papal approval, Oh, and he had arrested a bishop who had been appointed by the Pope. Now, this wasn't the first time a king had tried to tax the church, nor was it the first time a king had tried to appoint their own bishops without papal approval. The big thing this time is that Philip the Fair was not giving up his claim to these rights. Boniface, trying to bring Philip back into the fold, sent a papal bull to Philip in 1301. And we call this bull Ascolta Fili, listen son, or listen my son. Really quickly, papal bulls are just fancy letters from the Pope, intended for public consumption and registered. They're often named after the first words in the letter. I haven't found a translation from Latin, but Google Translate has helped me again, and I'll put the computer translation on the website at the end of this episode's transcript in case anyone wants to read it. To say that it's condescending would be an understatement. But the funny thing is that Philip might not have ever read it. And why do I say this? Because Robert of Artois tossed it into a fire. Seriously, the Catholic Encyclopedia quotes, "Artois stored it from the archdeacon's hands and cast it into the fire," end quote. I'm sure Philip read it, but he was able to suppress the public copy for the moment. So yes, while Charles of Valois was over in Italy, being a mostly good boy for the Pope, his older brother was causing a few problems. As you can imagine, this is going to end poorly for either the Pope or Philip. Fate decided to say, why not both? Boniface threatened to excommunicate someone who was implied to be Philip, and Philip sent de Nogaret along with 200 knights to Rome to sort out his problem. De Nogaret turned the problem up to 11, and on the 7th of September 1303, de Nogaret and his men attacked the papal palace. At this point, Boniface properly excommunicated Philip. In response, de Nogaret kidnapped the Pope and had him beaten. Boniface didn't die right away. He lived until the 11th of October 1303, but the beating did him in. He was succeeded by Benedict the 11th, less than 2 weeks after he died. That is a really quick election for the time period, if anyone's curious. Benedict was an Italian, but not hostile to Philip the Fair. One of his few acts, his papacy lasted less than a year, was to lift Philip the Fair's excommunication. The Pope who succeeded Benedict after an almost year-long papal conclave was Clement V, a Frenchman, and he will come up again soon. With his brother's papal issues sorted out, at least for the moment, Charles of Valois had to get back to what he did best, or worse, battle. Philip the Fair had further military plans for Flanders, because honestly, it just flares up every few years. As in, if I bring up every single time it happened in Charles's life, I would just be doing an episode on Flanders. The king had been delaying because he wanted to finally lead the army himself. I mentioned it earlier, but Philip was not one to lead campaigns. That's what he had brothers for. And I should probably also tell you that in 1302, French forces had lost a battle against the Flemish that we call the Battle of the Golden Spurs. So named because the Flemish took the spurs from the French, whom they had decisively defeated. Robert of Artois, the grandfather of the Robert of Artois from the start of the Hundred Years' War episode, died in this battle. I only note that because this Robert's death will indirectly give Edward III one of his eventual excuses to attack France. And it also indirectly leads to the Tour de Nesle affair. Robert's county and other holdings went to his surviving child, his daughter, Mahout, instead of his grandson, Robert of Artois, the surviving son of the elder Robert's only son. Funny little note. The younger Robert of Artois will become Charles's son-in-law in 1320, which you may remember from the Hundred Years' War because everyone is related. Mahout's daughters, Joan and Blanche, would marry Philip and Charles, the younger two sons of Philip the Fair. So that would be Charles La Marche. For this campaign, Charles of Valois was joined by Louis of Evreux, his and Philip's younger half-brother. At the Battle of Mons in Pevel, in August of 1304, the French were doing really well at first until they needed to take a rest. The Flemish momentarily rallied, but with Charles and Philip leading the charge, the French were victorious, or at least claimed to be. Both sides claimed they won, and eventually they came to a treaty that allowed Flanders to remain free, at least for the moment. But we should get back to Charles of Valois. He had a quick detour from court politics in May of 1305, when his third child and second daughter, Joan, married William of Hainaut. Joan was 11 at the most, and William was 21. Their first child, also William, was born 2 years later. Yes, I know, don't think about it too much. Their fourth child, Philippa, will play a huge role in the relationship between England and France. And now we get to more politics. Remember how I mentioned that Pope Clement would come up again? Well, he's Pope now. It really did take almost a year to elect him due to the makeup of the College of Cardinals. Half were French and half were Italian. Once Clement was finally selected, he held his coronation, after some urging from Philip the Fair, in Lyon. The coronation itself, on the 14th of November 1305, went fine. But the parade after did not go so well. Clement was escorted by Charles of Valois and John, Duke of Brittany. As would be expected in a time without TV, people were excited to see the new pope, and a large group of people climbed on a wall that was along the route. This wall collapsed, killing the Duke of Brittany and injuring Charles and Clement. Both would survive, but Charles was out of action for a while. He used his recovery time to plan his invasion of Constantinople. That's one way to avoid being bored. There is one little historical moment I shouldn't ignore. In 1306, the Jews of France were expelled. This is something that has sadly happened to the Jewish populations throughout history. Clement, who will have a great relationship with Charles and a difficult relationship with Philip the Fair, allowed this campaign to be considered a crusade, as in Charles of Valois' campaign to Constantinople. Remember, a crusade is special in that it takes care of some of the sin that might make you wait longer in purgatory. It makes recruiting people a little easier. With Clement's okay, along with Philip's okay and money, Charles began building a coalition. He asked for naval support from Genoa and Venice. Genoa said, "No, thank you." They had already had their own problems in Constantinople. But Venice offered 12 galleys and told Charles he could buy as many more as he needed. He planned to depart at the end of March 1307, so he had almost a year and a half to get things ready. He corresponded with the King of Armenia, because if he won, they would be his neighbors. In addition, he needed soldiers, so he began negotiating with the Catalan Company, a Spanish mercenary group, and Charles was hoping that due to the Catalan Company's experience in Constantinople, they would be helpful allies. Sadly for him, he was unable to hire them. Charles was given a tenth from Sicily by Clement. A tenth is 10% of church takings in the area awarded for a set amount of time. Despite having had a bit of time to plan, Charles didn't even leave France until mid-June 1307, and that's after visiting the Pope in Avignon first. He began making his way, rather slowly, to... You know what? It doesn't actually matter because he didn't get there. On the 11th of October, 1307, Catherine, Charles's wife and the reason for his claim to Constantinople, died at 32. She was survived by four children, her son John, who would only live a year longer, and her daughters, Catherine, Joan, and Isabel. For those keeping track, that means Charles has two daughters named Isabel, or Isabella, and two named Joan. He didn't seem too upset by his wife's death and probably would have continued on his way, but Philip the Fair needed him. Catherine's funeral on the 12th of October was well attended. She even had the Grand Master of the Knights Templar as one of her pallbearers, Jacques de Molay. De Molay's presence in Paris was lucky for Philip. It made arresting him on the 13th of October rather easy for the French king. Charles gave up on his attempt to take Constantinople to stay in France and help his brother. In addition to de Molay, Philip had the rest of the Knights Templars arrested. Since this isn't Philip's story, I'll leave most of it for now. I do discuss this a bit more in The Capetian Miracle Ends, the first episode of miniseries 2, so go listen there. You do need to know that Charles of Valois was supportive of his brother in most ways, but wasn't active in prosecuting the Templars. It did slow down his attempts, though, to go to Constantinople. With this further delay in Charles's attempts to claim a throne, any throne, I'll be stopping for a week. I'll be back next week to discuss the remainder of Charles's life. I'll see you all then. Bye. Thank you for listening to Past. I can be found on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at PastPod. That's PassedPod. Please feel free to email me at PastPod@gmail.com. I have a Patreon that can be found at patreon.com/PastPod.